Welcome to the Once Upon a Leader in Africa podcast with George Nudu. We invite you to listen to influencers and opinion shapers narrating their experiences from their leadership roles in Africa, from the world of business, community development, government, corporate, social enterprise, among others. We will glean from their good, bad, and ugly side of their leadership journey and be inspired to overcome adversity, to pursue success against all odds, to be a great leader, and many other lessons. Welcome to the podcast, and here's George Nudu.
Welcome to part two of our last podcast episode.
So, what are some of the leadership traits that you can say have helped you in your leadership journey and in your exercise of the responsibility that you now have?
The first thing that is important to me is having true love for, number one, the people you serve, number two, the work you do, and number three, love God. If you don't love the people you serve, and for me, this is what I practice. And when I look at my team, for example, every decision I make it out of not, of course, you must make tough decisions, but even in making those tough decisions, you're making them out of love. So you're really considering, you know, what would make the organization thrive and what would not destroy any individual that passes through your organization. And when you lead people with love, they reciprocate. It is really an enduring leadership, you know, motivational approach, because you can motivate people with a stick. And many leaders use that because you have authority. And I say, for me, I say authority is not the main instrument of leadership. Authority is a privilege to extend grace. So you don't use authority to oppress, but use authority to cover, because you have that power, you know, but you need to make people know that you care about them as a leader. They will care about your business. And one classical example that really showed me that their dividends in leading people and affirming to them that I can go an extra mile to ensure that you are safe, you are appreciated, your family does not sleep hungry, you do not walk to work when I can do something about it. You know, when we were going through the transition of EBIT, of a KBP, Kenya Biogas program, the 5-year program into EBPL, it was a really shaky moment because we did not have funding. Our funding was being cut short. Team, I had a team of 27 people. For me to transition successfully, I had to justify to the board of Hivos Foundation that I will have enough capacity after the program ends. But enough capacity means you have field officers on the ground, you have your technical team with you, and they're working with you. So all of them, of course, were shaken because end of contracts, I don't have a contract to give them, I don't have money. But trust me, all of them agreed to stay on with me. They're very well experienced people. Our finance managers over 20 years experience in as a CFO in running international organizations, he stuck with me. Our program engineer has over 15 years of experience in engineering, civil engineering and energy engineering, he stuck with me. And he did not stick with me under very good and a very comfortable circumstances, because we had to take a salary cut. All of us. We had to forfeit our pension because I didn't have money to give pension. We had to forfeit our medical cover. Everyone had to take care of their medical cover, and these are people with families. You know, all I had to give them was a dream and a vision and me. See, this is me. You've worked with me. You've been here for 5 years. I believe you're going to make it. Are you working with me in this? Only one person left out of 27. And I still have the 26th cadet 2 years on. And things are getting better. We've reinstated, you know, medical cover. We've reinstated, we've improved the perks a little bit, you know. We are going to reinstate the pension. Things are getting better. But for me, I realized that you can actually make, you can build a team that is not based on transactions, but relationship. And that is only when you, I was just emphasizing on the important trait of love. And of course, the other thing about leadership is trust. People work with people they can trust. People stick with people they can trust. And I think trust is about three things. It's about being credible. So as a leader, you have to be credible. You have to show you're competent, because people don't trust you just because you have a big title, but because when they interact with you and they give you a job, you do it and you do it well. You know, so trust is about credibility. And of course, trust is also about being available. You know, you might be good, but if you're not available, people will just say, okay, George is good. We know his work, but he's never here for us. So even if I have a big assignment that is at stake and he's the only one who can do it and he's not here, I will fail. So I think be credible, but also be available to people, you know. And I think what again builds trust is your orientation. When people interact with you, do they feel like you are oriented towards self or you care about them, you know? So trust is very important. When I interact with people, you really want to be deliberate and say, yes, this is my organization, but it's all about making things better for you in your speech, in your acts, in your products. You know, and I think that's why organizations have all these good, what do we call them, the slogans, you know, for you, you know, because you really want to work on the orientation bit about your organization or as a leader. So do people perceive you as a person who is a user? You know, and very many people keep on complaining on social media that, oh, my organization, the leadership team, they're just interested about themselves. They don't care about us. You don't want your team to think of you as a person who is selfish and self-oriented, you know, and that does not mean that the organizational interests are not put forward, but it's just your attitude and how you handle things. Yeah. So love is very important. Trust keeps your relationships, and it grows more relationships, and it sustains those relationships, you know, as a leader.
So you seem to really enjoy what you're doing. And I know leadership, you know, is got pressure. What are some of the things you've had to endure as a leader?
I think one of the most difficult time, and I think I've just mentioned this, is when you are also feeling helpless as a leader. I think that's a situation where no leader wants to find themselves. And many leaders found themselves in that situation during COVID. You know, you have people who've been faithful to the organization and you're forced to lay them off. In your heart, you don't want to release them, but you feel helpless, you know. And because I love the scriptures, I think the most difficult time for, you know, a personality in the scripture that I love so much, David, was when his camp was raided by enemies and their wives and children were taken away from them. And everybody was asking, now, what is this? You know, and David felt helpless, and he encouraged himself. You know, the Bible says that he encouraged himself in the Lord. So the time I felt helpless actually was when we did not have money, you know, to pay for my organization team medical cover. It really hurt me. It was about 1 year, you know, of people struggling, and you feel like, do I now take my money from my pocket and pay for, you know, my colleague's medical issue with their daughter, with their son? For me, feeling helpless when your team is suffering under situations that are beyond your control is really a moment that no leader wants to get into. And the reality is, as we lead, those are cycles, that situations that are beyond our control will always come, you know. And how do we operate in those situations? I think we just have to be honest. When it's in difficult times, I think what wins is honesty and vulnerability. You know, that is not the time when you want to show your Superman side, you know, because people will think you are thriving at their expense. That's the time for you to really, you know, be present, you know, and be there with them, you know, and also be vulnerable in a way that is empowering, but in a way that, you know, you're showing that things are really that bad. You just show people that I am also enduring this pain with you, and there is something that I'm doing about it. So for me, enduring, seeing, you know, my team going through a very difficult time because they've agreed to tag alongside me with my vision was really very difficult. The second thing is in a tech for trade. I think when I had my last conversation with my boss, then the CEO, him telling me that we have not succeeded. You know, that is something that lives with you when you know that you were given a chance, you were given resources, but you did not meet expectations. How do you move on, you know, beyond that? How do you pick up yourself? How do you tell a positive story, you know, from there on? You know, when I sat with him and he says, you know, Kevin, we tried our business model. I gave you the platform and it never works. We need to get someone else to come and take over from this point. It was really, for me, that was really difficult. And I shared the story, you know, I shared the story to people openly to show them that there are always two sides of any successful story. So I think for me in my leadership journey, those were the two most enduring moments. And yeah, one of them is an old one, you know, just an old story that I love telling young men and women. When I was in high school as the school captain, I remember I was in Isili High School. So Isili High School was known for strikes. When a term ends without a strike, that is a historical, you know, term. So this particular time, one of our students was run over by a matatu on a Thursday. And on a Friday, we had assembly. So I got intelligence because I had very many friends that tomorrow people are going to the streets. So people really used to communicate to me. So I had intelligence. So that morning, we had to do assembly because you cannot close assembly. If you say we don't have assembly, you're actually fanning the flame. So I told the principal we have to do assembly. So that morning, the principal asked me, what are we going to do? I did not have an answer, but I said, we're going to manage the situation. So what used to happen is the school prefect on duty used to come and give their speech, the school captain, and then the deputy. So when I was stepping on the podium, people now started, you know, chanting and saying that they want to go to the street. At the moment, I told them, this is the first time I will allow you as a school captain to go to the street. And we are not going to the street to steal or destroy property. We are going to have a peaceful demonstration. And I give authority to all of you. If you see anyone misbehaving, discipline them on my behalf. So the principal was taken aback. He did not know that I'm going to make that decision, you know. So we went out. It was one of the most peaceful demonstrations. Of course, a few characters tried to steal, and we were tear gassed because people were not comfortable with the senior school students in the street. But it was one of the moments that I had to take an unpopular decision, you know, that saved the school, because now the school would have been destroyed and would have been destroyed. Nobody was arrested. And people came back to school in the afternoon and went back to class. And life came back to normal. So I think sometimes as a leader, you have to take unpopular decisions. And those are moments, those are lonely moments. And it's only results that bail you out. So I think people don't sometimes look at what you're doing as a leader. They just wait to see the results. And that's when they start affirming you.
So looking at your leadership journey, and you said your story so well, what are just some of the nuggets, you know, you would tell a young leader starting off, you know, seeing yourself, your young self out there? What would be some of the things that to kind of help them be great leaders, even better than you and beyond what you have achieved? What are some of the nuggets you'd share with them?
Start discovering yourself early. Make yourself your homework. Think we are so much busy studying things and other people, and we are not very good students of self. You know, so knowing what you're passionate about, knowing what you want to pursue, knowing your strengths, you know, is very important to the second step that I would encourage a young leader, because you don't want to, sharpen what is popular and is not your strength. So I think the first thing is self-awareness. What am I passionate about? What are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? You know, how do I live with this and become the best version of myself? You know, and the self-awareness, it comes out of different avenues. I think a very good company can help you know yourself. People, friends, and individuals who really mean well can help you learn yourself better, you know. And I don't think you can learn yourself in a crowd. So building those deliberate, intentional relationships of people who also are focused and really serious about making a difference in their lives and other people's lives makes a big difference. At a young age, I remember when we were just graduating, I called five young men from KU, and we formed a group called Troopridge. So it was a group of five young men. So initially we were just, and our vision then was to build, you know, ourselves and build into responsible, you know, men and women who are raising responsible families, who are all graduates, not started, not none have gotten a job. We are still in the group now. All of us are married. All of us have children. We attended each other's weddings. We've paid a dowry for each other. We contributed, you know, but these were deliberate people around me that would basically keep me to check. You know, I remember that, when I first bought my plot, you know, in a bushy area, all the other guys within, I chair that team. All those guys started working hard to buy a plot, you know. Instead of waiting for big money to get a plot in Karen, they said, so someone can actually even live in Rongai, someone can live in Kibiko, someone can live in Katani. So I think self-awareness basically is deliberate, and just get both mirrors, reflect as an individual and get people who can really tell you honestly who you are around them by the feedback they give you. Once you're aware of yourself, you notice two things. Number one, you notice the things that you're really good at, the things that you're naturally gifted to do. Those are your strengths. You know, then you'll notice the things that really draw you back, your weaknesses. So step number two is very important. Be deliberate. Don't ignore your strengths. Build on them. I think our strengths are our stepping stones. And then that's when now you know where to invest in terms of sharpening yourself, is in minimizing your weaknesses. You know, because some people really focus on broadcasting their strength, and they think that weaknesses don't matter for as long as people have not seen them. But they do. They minimize your full potential, your capacity to, you know, experience your full potential. So you might not be good at people skills. You're a good IT, you know, programmer. You know, you can do your programming without necessarily socializing. But socializing is a good ingredient in growing your business or in growing your skill. So you have to understand that whether your skill does not require socialization, and that's a weak point, that socialization is where now your product is going to sell. That's the marketing avenue. So I think sharpening your, converting your weaknesses to strengths and optimizing your strengths is very important. And these are ordinary things. You know, I don't read... I have a weakness in people say me, you know me, I don't read books. It's just my weakness. But you know, reading books adds value, you know. Information becomes obsolete with time. So update yourself. You know, it's very important. Things are changing. Technologies are changing, approaches, methodologies, how people do things, the way we wrote our CVs in 2002 is different from the way people are writing their CVs now. So you cannot go to a 60-year-old to train you to write a CV, you know. So number three is have your own perspective, your mission in life. Define your mission. You know, have your mission. What are you living for? I think that's very important. And sometimes it's not that big thing. It can be in the simple things. I think when you're young, you don't have to, you know, overburden yourself with having this that big mission statement, but just have, you know, a mission of the moment. You know, I am a graduate. I just want to make a difference, you know, in the lives of children. Right now, my skill is IT. I just probably I'll do it by just training my neighbors. You know, I'm onto something. You know, have a mission that directs your decisions and choices. Because I think if you don't have a mission at your level, at any level, then you scatter your resources. You scatter your efforts, your resources, and you might not build on something. You know, because I think one greatest ingredient in impact is, you know, in building on something. You cannot spread yourself too wide. You know, if you really want to, you have to have a specific mission and pursue it. Then I think attitude, your attitude in life. And this one is not generic. I cannot tell you have this attitude, but I can say you must build your leadership attitude. For me, my leadership attitude is nurturing. I want to lead by nurturing. You know, that's what I'm home with. I want to be patient with people, you know. I want to invest in people. I want to hold the hand of a person until everybody says, you're not giving up on George. I said, no, I think George has something going on and I'm going to see it come out. That's my attitude. It helps me not, you know, get stressed. You know, it helps me not get worked up because I know I want to nurture. I want to bring something out of a seed, you know. You know, so have your leadership attitude that is empowering, you know, and let that be your, basically your moderator. What moderates you? You know, there are people who would say, I just want to lead by, you know, giving. You know, that's what moderates me. So any opportunity to give, that's how I'll express, you know, my leadership. I'll give my time, I will, you know, give my ideas. And I have a friend who's like that. He actually even sends money to my parents. You know, and my parent calls me and say, hey, you know, so-and-so sent me money for Christmas. Like, I'm ashamed because I didn't send you money at that point. So, and that really, that's what moderates how he relates with his environment, is because he's a giver. You know, so what's your leadership orientation or attitude, and how does it make you unique? Then the last thing is your philosophy. What's your leadership philosophy? And you know, this is a big word, but we have to simplify it. What is your interpretation of what leadership is or should be? You know, my philosophy is if you're a leader, you don't have to prove you're a leader. You just lead. So don't prove. Don't strive, because that's another an excess. That's a burden that you're putting on yourself. You can never have enough evidence to satisfy the expectations of humans. They will change every day. Even the person that you impressed so much 2 weeks ago might feel so disappointed with you today. So if you're living by, you know, the philosophy of I have to prove myself, you'd struggle as a young leader. Just lead, you know. So I have nothing to prove. For me as a leader, all I have to do is just lead.
Sound advice there.
Yeah, and George, it's because I think our young brothers and sisters are under so much pressure. Under so much pressure. And for as long as people have positions and possessions, they feel like they are leaders, but that is the least indicator of leadership. For me, position and possession is the last things that I would put as the true mark of a leader. You know, values for me rank first, because why you do whatever you do is more important than what you do. So we are so much under pressure. People make money. When someone has a million shillings in their accounts, they don't care about anything else. They just feel like everybody should respect me. Everybody should recognize me. I deserve the red carpet, you know. So we are really diminishing leadership into possessions and positions. And that's where we are going wrong as a community. We need to now look at the core things of leadership. Courage, you know, that's the core values of leadership. Truth, integrity, you know. Whether you have a million shillings or 100 bob, can we trust you? That is what matters, you know. That is what is going to have to make our country become sustainable and make our country better for everyone to live in. But for as long as we are perpetrating this competition around who has the biggest mansion, the latest car, those things are good, but they cannot supersede the core values that drive our community, that brings people together, you know, that makes people become human, you know, and of help to one another in a society.
Wow, well said, well said. We're coming to the tail end of this conversation. And talking legacy, for you, what legacy are you creating? Not are you planning to create? I believe you're already creating it.
Legacy is
not for the future. It's already creating, because we never know the day the Lord will call us up. So the day the Lord calls us up, what do we want left behind? What are you doing now that will make people say?
As I said when it began, is my passion is in community. I believe community is what makes life what it is. You know, you can imagine if you were in an island by yourself with all the gold and silver, not have joy.
No.
You want at least one person to tell, you know, that I have gold. Or at least you want one person to sit down with and share the gold with and experience that joy. So for me, if all I'm going to do would be to build a more prosperous, cohesive, you know, community that is improved in terms of the way of life, their livelihood, that would make me very fulfilled and happy. You know, I don't want my legacy to be about what King Usu was before he passed on. You know, he was the managing director. That's not a legacy. That's a position. So really, I am looking at making a contribution in making communities better, making communities' livelihoods improve, making communities sustainable, you know, by themselves, so that they can feel dignified, you know. They can feel, I don't think the Budalangi people were happy to say Serikali's idea. Nobody is happy to stretch their hand every day for help. So if there's something that I can do today to make a person, a man and a woman in a village, you know, safeguard his sense of dignity as a human, that for me is my legacy. And I'm doing this right now with my team by supporting communities, you know, access a dignified way of, you know, of cooking and kind of like producing their energy. One, from our studies, we realized that the biggest expense in any household from food is energy. Even a person living in the urban center, you'll pay your electricity, you'll buy gas, you'll pay your fuel, all those are energy. So for any house, whether in the village or in town, your second highest expense is energy. So for me and my team, if we can reduce that expense by 70%, it means we are increasing the disposable income of every rural household by 70%. And we are not just giving a solution, biodigesters for them, but we've gone a step ahead to organize them into community-based organization, because there has to be sustainability of every initiative that you do. How is it going to outlive you or outlive your organization? So with these CBOs, we are doing two things. Number one, we are basically linking them with skills. We are calling decentralization of technical skills to communities. Right now, if someone wants their stove to be repaired, they have to call for someone to come from Nairobi. That is disempowering. So we are now training young men and women locally as technicians so that they are part of that CBO. They can be contracted within their villages. They can train others within their villages. So we are decentralizing skills, and knowledge and capacity to constituency level. So all our CBOs are at constituency level. You know. Number two, we are also now mobilizing resources for CBOs so that now we are not looking at the approach of mobilizing funds so that we can spend on individuals. We're mobilizing funds so that we can decentralize it to CBOs to meet local needs. So that's very important to us. The second thing we are doing, apart from the CBOs, is encouraging the CBOs to be entrepreneurial. So we have a fund, we are calling it the LEAD Fund, Local Energy Access Dukkha Fund. So we are saying every CBO that is progressive enough, we are going to invest capital for them to start a shop, a local energy shop. When someone wants to buy a solar lamp, they don't have to send someone to the nearest town. It will be available in the local energy access. And this is community owned, community run, community managed. We offer technical capacity. So we want to have local energy access dukkhas in all constituencies of the country. This year, we are launching two of them. We've already done the CBOs. We are at number 55. End of 2023, we want to have 200 CBOs in 200 constituencies, you know, and two local energy access dukkhas. And this is something that we are building on. By the time, I transition to the next step, I want to see these communities thriving by themselves. I want to see these communities training other people locally. I want to see these dukkhas getting investments from other parties. We're just planting a seed. So for me, is to invest in community and support communities to thrive by themselves. That is the contribution I want to do. I want, when I go to Migori, people can say, that is the man who, you know, brought local energy access dukkhas to Migori. Yeah. You know, and it has helped us, you know, employ our young men and women. It has helped us access solutions affordably, you know, not overpriced, rates because it's coming from Nairobi. So those are the things that, in just a simple way. And of course, I want to build as many leaders as possible, you know, under the Leader Impact Program. Just give what I have, share my story with them, inspire them with what I do, and allow them to be the best version of themselves.
And that's what you have done with you being in this show today. Thank you so much, Kevin.
Thank you, John.
It has been a joy hearing your great story. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's also reflective for me telling it. And you know, whenever you tell your story, it's also a challenge. Because of course, your today's victory is your starting point.
Yes.
Tomorrow. So I'm really trusting God and hoping that the story will continue. You know, and yeah, I mean, God giving us another opportunity, we'll come and share more testimonies of what has happened post-2023. And I also wish you well in what you're doing. I really appreciate what you're doing because there's a lot of stories and misinformation about what leadership is. And what you're doing is part of correcting, you know, attitudes, you know, and perspective about what leadership is. And it's not just about big names. It's about contribution, you know, and I'm humbled that, you know, you give me the platform to do that. And anybody who listens, you know, anybody who listens will learn something. You know, I've listened to some of the podcasts that you've aired, and there's a lot of learning, you know. One experience is a lot of experience, so don't learn from it. You don't have to repeat the same mistake. So thank you so much for this, and I pray that it will grow, you know, and thrive so that people can have a platform where they can learn from others and get mentored through other people's stories.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And wish you great success in the great work that you're doing with the communities. That's very commendable. God bless you.
Thank you so much, Sansana.
Thank you for joining us in today's podcast. We hope you're leaving with insights that will help you live and lead better. We appreciate our sponsors, BNG Consultants Limited and BNG Center for Leadership Coaching, for keeping us on air. Bye for now. See you in our next episode.